This episode of Sick contains a few curse words and deals with sexual themes. Just keep that in mind if you have kids around.
You've arrived.
Okay. Check, check, check. This is Jake. This is Jake. Obviously really nervous. We can't quite see his house from where we are. We're at the end of his driveway, and my heart is starting to pound a little bit now that we're doing this. All right. Should we start walking?
Yeah.
So wait, what am I saying? So, hi, Dr. Klein. My name is Jake. I'm with WFYI.
I left.
Oh, shit.
You're walking on private property. You have no business over here.
Oh.
Private property.
Yes, ma'am. We were just going to knock on the door.
You're not knocked on the door. You are not welcome here. You are to leave. This is private property.
We've spent months trying to get an interview with Dr. Donald Klein. He's almost 81 years old and retired now, but Klein used to be one of the most successful fertility specialists in Indiana. People called him the best of the best. A few years ago, Klein was discovered to have deceived his patients. In the 1970s and 80s, instead of using donor sperm to help many women get pregnant, he used his own. We wanted to get his side of the story. We sent him emails, and at first he did actually respond.
He replied, "Please don't join others who do not know what really happened. Please call my lawyer and tell him what you'd like to do. I can't make any decisions, but he can."
We emailed Klein's attorney, called him several times. No response. So we wrote a letter to Klein directly and dropped it in his mailbox.
We wrote, "So far, the media has missed a big part of this story. Your true intentions when you intervened with these patients and who you are outside of this one aspect of your career."
But he never called. Never wrote back. So finally, we went to his house. We only made it to the edge of the driveway when we were stopped short.
You are not welcome here. You are to leave. This is private property, and I will call the police.
We've looked at some pictures, and we're pretty sure that woman you heard is one of Klein's daughters. We know she lives close by. She must have seen us park at the end of his driveway, and she drove down to stop us.
And technically, we weren't trespassing. We asked a lawyer afterward. You're allowed to knock on someone's door.
But we didn't know that at the time, and it didn't feel worth the fight, so we left.
Okay. Okay, understand. All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
We still haven't been able to talk to Dr. Klein about what he did so many years ago, but we were able to find out a lot more about him than you might think. This is Sick, a podcast about what goes wrong in the places meant to keep us healthy. I'm Jake Harper.
And I'm Lauren Bavis. This season, we're looking at fertility treatment and one Indiana doctor's abuse of power.
Sisters born here in Indiana uncover a family secret. Their dad is not their biological father. They are donor children searching for answers. But do they have the right to know anything about the man who helped conceive them?
On this episode, who is Dr. Donald Klein? We meant what we wrote in those messages to Klein. We really do want to know more about this man outside this one aspect of his career. A person isn't just one thing. And since we weren't going to talk to the man himself, we scoured newspaper articles. We looked at archival TV footage from before Klein retired.
Brian, I'm ready to get a slate. And...
okay.
You want me to do that now?
Yeah, just so we have it on tape.
Okay, Donald Klein, and it's C-L-I-N-E.
We requested documents, talked to some of his former patients and their husbands.
I thought it was disgusting.
I can't understand why he did that.
I mean, he's definitely a sicko or something.
And we spoke to people who knew him as Don, his former classmates and colleagues, people who were around his practice and community when this doctor, who took an oath to provide the best care for his patients, took such a wrong turn. Here's what we found.
Donald Lee Klein was born in 1938. His parents raised him in Danville, Indiana, about 20 miles west of Indianapolis. Klein went to the University of Illinois for a few years on a basketball scholarship.
Played a little basketball in Illinois for a couple of years.
Did you?
Yeah. He even roomed with a future NBA player named Don Ohl.
Don Ohl, O-H-L. Played a about 10 years for the old Baltimore Bullets, who then became the Washington Bullets, and then, of course, to be politically correct,
they changed their name to the Wizards. Yeah.
But Klein broke his shoulder playing touch football and lost the scholarship.
But I met my wife there, so...
He met his wife at Illinois before he transferred to Indiana University in Bloomington. They married in 1959, and the next year, Klein started medical school at IU in Indianapolis.
These days, women make up about half of med school graduates. It wasn't that way in the 60s, when Klein was becoming a doctor. In Klein's med school yearbook, out of 148 people, eight, just eight, were women. The field was totally dominated by men, even gynecology and obstetrics.
When I was in medical school, I was a junior, I was walking down a corridor on my OB rotation and some guy stuck his head out of a room and said, does anybody know how to scrub?
This is Dr. Tom Ferrara. He's semi-retired now, but he was an obstetrician gynecologist his entire career in Indianapolis. He was Klein's contemporary, even referred patients to him. And he recalls the exact moment he knew what he wanted to do for the rest of his life.
And so I said, I do. And he said, great, I need some help. So I went out and scrubbed and got my gown and gloves on and looked, and there was this lady up in stirrups. He said, would you like to sit down? And I said, oh, God, yes. So I sat down, and I realized that the mom is here, I'm here, and the real doctor is back there behind me. I said, shouldn't we change places? He said, no, I'm going to talk you through it. So I delivered the first baby I ever saw born. And I was ready to sign my contract right now.
It's a cute story, right? But you're probably picturing a woman in labor, squeezing her husband's hand during contractions. That's not what was going on.
She was asleep. You got to remember, this is in the 60s. This is long. We don't do this anymore. So the nurse kind of pushed on the abdomen. The baby came out. That's what we did it then. That's the way it was.
Lauren and I are seasoned health reporters, so we took this information in stride.
So, wait, they pushed on the abdomen?
Well, the mom's asleep. She can't do anything.
Backtracking, the mom was asleep?
The mom was asleep. Yeah. Asleep. Sleep.
And that's how all women gave birth, or that
many,
was...
Many, many, many of them did.
Thinking back, what's the biggest difference in practicing from when you first started as an OB to now? Or what's something that now you look back?
The biggest difference is that the mother has, it's more of a partnership. I had some awful stories of people. That one doctor told me when I was a resident that if the woman wasn't crying when you finished the exam, you hadn't done an adequate exam. I think a lot of guys went into OB because they couldn't handle women. Because if you're sitting up there in stirrups and I'm standing between your legs, who's in a position of power?
In 1963, Klein was 24 years old, heading into his final year of med school. According to the Indianapolis papers from that time, one summer Saturday morning, Donald Lee Klein was driving in downtown Indianapolis when he hit a four-year-old girl. She was hurled 20 feet by the car, breaking her leg and suffering head and internal injuries. Klein told police the girl darted out into the street and that he couldn't avoid hitting her. The girl died a few days later. Around that time, a med school classmate, Dr. Evan Lehman, remembers hearing that Klein had found religion.
At some point, either he mentioned or I had heard that he had gotten saved, something like that. And I do know that he was sincere in his faith.
Mm-hmm. How do you know that?
Just from the way he would talk. He would talk about the church or I can't remember.
But it was sort of present in his speech.
It would be present in his speech, yes.
We bring this up because Klein's religion seems to have had a major influence, not only on his personal life, but on how he presented himself in public and how he practiced medicine. Klein attends a big church in Zionsville, Indiana, where he lives. He's been active in that church for decades now. He's led fishing trips to Canada with his fellow churchgoers. Some of his congregation would even later defend him after the news broke about what he had done. And while the two aren't necessarily related, Klein is proudly anti-abortion. He even put his name on a full-page ad in the Indianapolis Star newspaper, stating that life begins at conception. We also found an old video of an Indianapolis TV show called Healthy Living. A segment from 2004 shows Klein as a doctor at the top of his game, on the cutting edge of his field.
This is a pretty dramatic advance.
It is, and we're excited as we can be about it. What you're talking about is the process that we've developed where
That's something we heard repeatedly about Klein. He was good at what he did. He was one of the first to specialize in fertility treatment, and he stayed current on the latest in reproductive medicine. He used laparoscopic surgery and laser surgery when both of those techniques were new. St. Vincent Hospital even had his name up on its wall of honor. This 2004 story was consistent with that image of Klein. In the story, Klein was trying to pioneer an egg-freezing technology, which gets back to his beliefs.
If you believe that life begins at conception, as I do, then you have a problem with these frozen embryos. My problem...
For this to make sense, you'll need a little lesson in fertility medicine. Before in vitro fertilization, a patient takes drugs so that a doctor can go in and retrieve several eggs at once. Then the eggs are fertilized. The lab combines the eggs and sperm so they can develop into embryos. At that point, the doctor can transfer an embryo to the woman's uterus. Any extra embryos can be frozen for later, in case the woman doesn't get pregnant, or if she wants another baby. But after the woman is finished having children, any leftover frozen embryos may just sit in storage. And to Klein, that creates a moral dilemma.
My problem is, what do you do when your family's completed and you have these frozen embryos left over?
Klein wouldn't freeze embryos because, again, he believes life begins when the sperm and egg combine. An embryo is a person. You shouldn't just discard it or keep it in storage without a plan. So the experimental technology he was promoting back then was freezing eggs. To Klein, an unfertilized egg isn't a person. You can freeze eggs and thaw them as needed, which takes care of the leftover embryo problem.
There are a lot of couples that have never even thought about it or considered it. And as I mentioned to them that in this practice we don't freeze embryos because of that, they'll frequently say, "Oh yeah, I never thought of that. No, I don't want to freeze embryos either." So there are many people that just haven't had this option presented to them.
Klein's conservative religious views played out in other ways. He wouldn't help single women or lesbians get pregnant. A nurse who worked with Klein told us that if a lesbian woman came to him for help getting pregnant, he would refer her elsewhere. That nurse also told us that Klein and his wife taught classes through his church on how to have a good Christian marriage. He also taught a parenting class called Growing Kids God's Way.
The field of fertility treatment in that era, in the 60s, it was brand new when Klein started his residency in obstetrics and gynecology. In vitro fertilization hadn't been invented yet. The fertility medicine that Dr. Ferrara learned was basically a side hustle to regular OBGYN work.
There was some basic stuff that you did. We did basal body temperatures, and we asked them about intercourse and how often, and did they get up right away. Pretty basic stuff. And there's a lot of psychological stuff, too, with it. It's very rewarding when they get pregnant.
Rewarding, but it could be time-consuming. Fertility medicine was advancing, becoming its own specialty. And some doctors, like Ferrara, just didn't want to deal with it, especially when it came to using donor sperm.
I never got into the sperm donor thing because, again, now you're becoming a little more technical than I want to get. And there's some precautions you got to take, and there's some stuff you have to do. And I didn't want to do it.
I didn't care to do it, no. It was too involved. And I thought, no, I don't want to do this.
For Dr. Lehman, Klein could fill the void. He could devote himself more and more to helping women get pregnant. And over the years, doctors like Lehman and Ferrara would send patients to him.
I'll leave this to Dr. Klein, who really liked doing this kind of thing.
And most of us said, yes, let me tell you, Mrs. Johnson, you're having a problem with fertility. Let me send you to Dr. Klein. He knows how to do it.
In 1971, Klein had joined a private OBGYN practice. Only one of the partners in that practice is still alive, and he didn't want to talk with us on tape. But we did have a brief conversation with him over the phone. We didn't get into the specifics of what Klein did. He didn't want to go on record judging Klein, one way or another. He did say that he respected Klein's work, and that Klein immediately showed his interest in artificial insemination. Within a year of joining the practice, maybe even earlier, we don't really know, Klein used his own sperm to impregnate one of his patients. We know that because the oldest half-sibling identified, as of this recording, was born in October 1972.
We spoke to a lot of people about Donald Klein, about what he was like as a doctor, as a person, as a coworker and classmate. We got a lot of memories, some good, some bad, like you would with almost anybody. A few details stood out, though. Klein wore cowboy boots every day, even in surgery, apparently because of his arthritis. Klein carried a gun. He carried it in his cowboy boots. And Klein could be cold. Some of his colleagues told us that even if he knew you for years, if you left his practice, you were essentially shut out. He cut ties.
But the most curious detail to us is that while he was well known in the baby business, Klein also had an interest in another species.
Sheets over all of the furniture. I have always been a dog person.
Klein was in fact a dog breeder, and not just any dog breeder. Klein took a special interest in Shar-Pei's. If you haven't seen one before, they're medium-sized, short tan fur. They have a black tongue and they're covered with wrinkles. The Indianapolis Star interviewed Klein about his hobby in the 80s. His Shar-Pei's were expensive, as much as $4,500. He said, if people want to pay, I'll provide them with a good dog. Hey, this is Jake.
And Lauren, thank you so much for listening to Sick.
It takes a lot of time and resources to make a podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, consider making a donation to WFYI.
Go to wfyi.org/give and be sure to mention SICK in the comments. That's wfyi.org/give. Thanks.
How did you find out that Donald Klein had done what he did?
Newspaper. I was, what? Klein? Oh, come on.
This is Dr. Ferrara again.
I couldn't conceive of that happening, so.
What does it feel like for you having referred women to him?
Well, I feel badly the way it turned out. At the time, I was doing what I believe was the best for the patient. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And nobody else knew either. I mean, if it had come out while I was doing it, or if there had been any suspicion, if anybody had said anything, that would have been it. That would have gone through the OB community pretty quickly.
Can you, like, break it down for me a little bit? What, I mean, this is a really stupid question. Why shouldn't a doctor use his own semen with his patients?
Well, you really need to have informed consent. Doing that and not informing the patient, I think that's what really gets me. If you're going to have a procedure done, any sort of procedure, if you got a wart on your hand, I'm going to take it off. I have to get your permission to do that. That's assault and battery.
For Dr. Lehman, the ethics in that era were less clear. He remembers doctors learned a little about infertility medicine during their OBGYN residency. But using your own sperm, that didn't figure into any lesson.
Nobody ever discussed that. It was never talked about. I don't know if it was just assumed that one wouldn't. Well, first of all, insemination was new. It was quite new, so the questions of ethics don't always come up when something is brand new. Mistakes have to kind of be made before we determine, hey, wait a minute, is this ethical or not?
Lehman definitely wasn't condoning what Klein had done, but he made a similar point to what some people wrote on social media after the news about Klein broke. Kind of like, what's the difference? For example, someone posted, they got what they wanted, right? Blessed with a child. even though it was in a very odd way, they still got the same result.
On the one hand, you can argue, well, he's a physician, he's a bright person. And on the other hand, deception itself is wrong.
And Klein's deception had consequences.
Sisters born here in Indiana uncover a family secret. Their dad is not their biological father. They are donor children searching for answers. But do they have the right to know anything about the man who helped conceive them?
In May of 2015, the Indianapolis TV station Fox 59 ran a story. And that story laid out a serious problem. 8 half-siblings had been born in the 70s and 80s, and all their mothers had seen the same fertility specialist. That group of siblings included Jacoba Ballard. Jacoba was all but certain that Klein was their biological father, but she couldn't prove it yet. They didn't have Klein's DNA, and Klein himself had admitted nothing. So for several months into the beginning of 2016, Jacoba and her siblings were basically stuck.
During that time, one of the siblings, like the original 8 of us, we actually call ourselves the OGs. At that time, finally got fed up, and one of the siblings sent a group Facebook message to all of Klein's children and grown grandchildren. So that kind of went back and forth, and then finally, one of my siblings said, look, we think your grandpa is our dad.
It was a bold move that got them blocked by Klein's relatives on Facebook without any new information. But it did shake something loose.
I want to say maybe a couple weeks went by or something like that. And Klein's son actually contacted me. I was really surprised. And I was really scared too and nervous. I mean, this is somebody I don't know. You're sitting there saying, hey, we think that you may be my half-brother, like your dad may have done this, and how are they going to react?
This was Doug Klein, one of the 4 children Klein had with his wife. We reached out to Doug with phone calls and texts, but he never responded. So this is what Jacoba remembers.
Jacoba talked to Doug on the phone. She went into some of the research they've been doing, shared names of relatives they had in common.
He was like, I will try to get you some answers.
In early 2016, Jacoba and one of her half-siblings met with Doug and Donna, one of Klein's daughters. Jacoba decided to meet at her church. It felt like a safe space.
So we're sitting there. They come in. They had talked to their dad, and at first he said that he did use a sperm, but he only used it 7 to 10 times.
This was the answer they had been looking for. Klein had admitted, through his kids anyway, that what Jacoba and her half-siblings believed was true. Klein was their biological father. He had used his own sperm without telling their mothers.
At the same time, Jacoba called bullshit. There were 8 siblings. Klein used his own sperm 7 to 10 times. The story just seemed too convenient. It wasn't that she thought Doug was lying. To Jacoba, it just seemed like he was parroting what his dad had told him.
Doug was very genuine and kind. And, you know, he said, look, I want to help you get to the bottom of this. Let's talk about this. Questions. You know, I'm going to get back with my dad, you know, and everything, and then I will get back with you.
Jacoba says after Doug talked to his dad again, the story changed. This time she heard it from Doug over the phone.
And he said that he only used his sperm 3 times, and he split each sample into 5 different samples. That doesn't even make sense. Doug said, like, you know, what can I help you do? And I said, I want to meet him. I want to see him face to face. I want him to look me in the eye and tell me the truth.
But within a reasonable length of time, I found out who they were, and I found out who the other 6 were, and they wanted to know if I would meet with them, and I did. From the very beginning, I said, yes, I'll be happy to meet with you.
That's next time on Sick.
Sick is a production of WFYI, Side Effects Public Media, and PRX. This program was made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
This episode was reported and produced by Jake Harper and me, Lauren Bavis, with additional reporting from Araceli Gomez Aldana. Our editors are Curtis Fox and Dave Rosenthal. Original music by Jordan Munson. Sound design by Story Yard.
Visit our website, sickpodcast.org, and find us on Facebook and Twitter at Sick Podcast. If you liked this episode, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or share it with a friend. It really helps. I'm Jake Harper.
And I'm Lauren Bavis. Thanks for listening.